You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
After 11 o'clock here on a Monday, joining me, and we had to get our act together here, but after a couple weeks, Alex Hollings from, you all know I'm from Soft Rep, so Alex, good morning, how are you?
Hey, not bad, man, thanks for having me on. You know, sorry I missed you last week.
Oh, no, you had some stuff going on, so not to worry, man, not to worry.
How's Quantico treating you?
You know what? It's actually pretty interesting to come back here for me. I one of the best tours I had as a Marine happened here. And now my son works here and teaches out of the basic school where I taught. And so it was my idea that we needed to improve the quality of instruction at the basic school, okay, that we could produce a better lieutenant and we didn't have to invest any money. But we all as instructors had to learn how to teach. We had to learn that machine guns don't really get taught Socratically, okay? That's a bit of a rote event, okay? And you had to learn the tricks.
Yeah.
You had to learn the tricks to get good at it, right? You know, how to do they did the initial instruction, and then, you know, do what we do with the enlisted Marines, man. What do Marines love? They love to compete. Okay, so you give them a period of time when they're messing with it, then we're going to time each other, and then we're going to race, and then we're going to narrow it down to the best guys, and they're going to race in front of everybody. So there's a little bit of fun, there's a little bit of competition, there's a lot of shit talking, and there's a little bit...
And there's more incentive than just, you know, your personal pride to try to get really good at it.
Right, there's, you know? and then there's always a little bit of humiliation. So it's like quintessentially the Marine Corps, but, you know, it's fun, and there's no reason that going out to train shouldn't be a good time. We'll work hard and all that. So, but you see so many guys who struggle with it to be instructors. And so I've done some reading about this thing that the Germans put together at their Kriegs Academy called the Instructor Education Program, and they brought guys in and they taught them what it was to teach. What are you embarked upon here? And lo, all these years later, started in 1991, so what, 19 and 18, 27 years later, it still exists. There's articles that I still, the syllabus is about 2 inches long where all the reference materials are in there. I've got, I want to say, a couple of different articles written in there, and so it's
awesome. That's
awesome.
Man. What's even cooler than that is that the next generation of McNamara is now there using these references that were put together by you. I can't imagine that. You know, my father served in the Army in Vietnam, did not have really good things to say about the military thereafter. He was not pleased when I enlisted. And I can't imagine what it would be like to find something that my dad had his hands on. In uniform, you know? I would love it if I could. I just think that's awesome that your son and you have that connection now.
No, I love it. And I'm asking questions. So what about this? What about this? Are you doing this? He goes, well, why don't you come out and check it out? I'm like, is it in session? He said, yeah. I'm like, okay, this thing was my idea, so if I see anything I don't like, I got it right, just so you know. He goes, dial it down, bro. Dial it down. We don't need kooky retired people doing crazy stuff, all right? We have work to do. I said, oh, so today it's kooky retired people? That's how we're treating our combat veterans these days? He's like, all right, we're not going to play that card this early in the morning, so let's get on with it.
You know, it's a fine line that I try to walk, too, because I remember when I used to do color guards and when I was working on I&I duty doing funerals and a lot of public relations. You'd always run into those vets who would come up and be like, well, hey, what's going on, young devil dogs? You guys want to kick some knowledge? And I'd be like, dude, No. A.A. Cunningham. All right, let's go. Let's keep moving. So now, as that old beardy vet, I'm always, like, self-conscious about being that guy when I meet Marines, you know? I'm like, hey, what's going on, guys? I'm really excited to meet you because I have a passion about what you do. But they're the guys still in. So that's not that cool.
No.
To be passionate about it, you know? It's a fine line you got to walk.
Yeah, it's a fine line. And you got to be a little bit good at reading the tea leaves, and not too many people are. Because, you know, as a retiree, you're, like, so excited. A Marine. Oh, my God. On active duty, no less. And he's fixed so I could rock up and talk to him. Yeah, I got him trapped. So let's go. Let's have at him. The Alex Holland's my guest today. He of Soft Rep. And we got a couple things to talk about. But to finish answering your question, I came to Quantico 35 years ago this month, at the end of the month, and changed the course of my life, obviously changed the course of the lives of both my sons. And so, and it hasn't changed that much. It changed some, but you know, the roads in, the vegetation, the golf course, all the stuff that's been here is still here. And, so it's pretty cool, pretty cool. So it's cool being around Marines too. You know, you get to, I was around them last week in Camp Lejeune. And, so I'm here. And my daughter-in-law heard me say Camp Lejeune. She said, is it Lejeune or Lejeune? I said, okay, look, you don't have to believe me, okay? I'm going to find the interview that I found on the Internet of General Lejeune's 88-year-old daughter named Dolly, and the interviewer says, do you know you mispronounce your own name? She says, and she said, they're from Louisiana, right? She says, pardon me? Yes. People pronounce your name Lejeune now. And she says, oh, that's not the way we pronounce it. She said, and then he says, well, how do you pronounce it? Lejeune. That's how it's always been pronounced. So there you have it. So everybody who's got a little issue with that, we don't say McNamara. We say McNamara. So if the Lejeunes say Lejeune, guess what their name is? It ain't Lejeune. So there you have it. And
you know, that's a bit of wisdom that I think that we need to impart on more young Marines. Because as I was coming up, I got put on a meritorious board to go compete. And, you know, when it comes to those meritorious boards, they tell you having the right answer doesn't always matter as much as just having proper military bearing and confidence.
Right.
During the interview portion of a board, right?
Right.
So you go in there, and they're going to ask you, you know, you've been spending the last 3 weeks studying Marine Corps knowledge in your shop because God help you if you embarrass your first sergeant, right? And you get there, and you've got all this stuff, you know, all the same things that we've been shouting at boot camp, right? Open Bay Johnson, Bruce Wood, right? And you get in there, and they'll ask you some off-the-wall question that has nothing to do with any of the Marine Corps knowledge. And I was told by my staff sergeant, if you don't know the answer, that's all right. Look them right in the eye and just say, General John A. Lejeune. That's the answer. That's the answer for any question you don't know. I want to tell you that that's the wrong methodology, but I did win the board.
What?
So maybe it's the right methodology. I only used that one time. But I forgot what the question was. They asked me some question that I knew was very clearly not General John A. Lejeune. You know, but they asked me the question. I repeated it back to buy myself some time. You know, and then I said the correct answer is General John A. Lejeune, Sergeant Major.
The oldest trick.
If that's incorrect, I'd be well done.
The oldest trick in the book, repeating the question. Listen to this. Speaking of, you mentioned a couple of women's names when you were speaking. Yes?
Yes, I did, because I assumed those were that's what they would really quiz me on. So, man, I went hard in the paint on female Marine history. Didn't get a single question on
okay.
That.
Okay, listen to this. So, I don't know that I got more than 3 hours of sleep starting last Sunday night when I was packing and getting ready to fly out, trying to get my show ready and taped and in the can. And then when I was went to Mike Musselman, who I do the third hour with, went to his house flew there. We had a party. He and I taped some stuff late, and I'd record an hour on my own. I think I got to bed at 3, got up at 6. We drove all night. What would that have been, Tuesday night? And then
– back on active duty time, man.
Yeah, man. I didn't even stay up that late on active duty, man. I was like, this is awful. So anyway, I drive up here. So then I go to the – at Camp Lejeune, I go to the 2nd Marine Division Change of Command. 4,000 Marines in a change of command.
It's just too much. I immediately started having anxiety.
I know.
About trying to organize
you
that.
You should see it, though. It looks incredible. They say march on the colors. 10 minutes later, the colors show up, right? Because they're on the flank. They're on the flank of the formation. Officer center takes 30 minutes, right? Everybody tripping in from the end, and then you got to go back. But anyway, so we do that, and I've got all these great friends there and battle buddies from Afghanistan. So we stay up till, 3:30 in the morning. I get up at 6:30 to go get my rental car, and I drive to Quantico. I'm going in the front gate. You'll love this. I'm going in the front gate here at the crossroads of the Marine Corps, and there's a half dozen cars backed up at the gate. So I'm sitting there. I get my brand new retired ID card that I got at Camp Lejeune, and I have it in my hand, and I fall asleep. Okay, I fall asleep like head chin on chest fall asleep. Not like head like Bob, like it wasn't a Bob, it was a full out shut down. So I don't know what woke me up, okay? But I wake up, I look up, and there's like five car lengths between me and the gate, and the gate guard is talking to the person in that car. Now I'm sure they thought I was on my cell phone, and now I can't find my
because your head's looking down.
Yeah, which I think is against the rules too, but nonetheless. So I'm like, oh my God, what the hell? So I pull up, but I can't find my ID. So I said, hey, I'm retired. I'm going to see my son, my daughter-in-law, my grandson here. They live here. And, I can't find my ID card. I dropped it here. And he looked at the branch of the service. I said, Marine Corps. He said, what's Marine Corps birthday? I said, November 10th, 1775. And he said, what's your rank? I said, Major. He said, who was the first female Marine? And I said, how the fuck would I know that? And he says to me, younger Marines know it. I said, well, in case you didn't notice, I'm not a young Marine, man. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
So he says, what's your first general order? Take charge of this post and all government property with insider training. He's like, have a great day, sir. I'm like, yeah, sound asleep. Then I get bombed with the first female Marine. Do you know that?
See, so I was just ahead of the curve because this is the thing. I went on, for the first board I went on, I lost to a female Marine, right?
Always.
And I was like, she had one more MCI than me. I was a tan belt and she was a green belt, Lance Corporals, in the Marine Corps Martial Arts Program. It's like, the next time, if I ever get myself on the board again, you better believe I'm going to fucking dominate it. So I was all in on McMap, all in on MCIs, piling them all up. And then when I went in for another board, I focused on female uniform regulations, female Marine history, certain that it was the fact that she knew more about female Marines than I did that had lost me the board. Then I got there and I didn't get asked a single question about any of that shit. They had me like weird random things, like if you're on a deployment and you see another Marine shoot a dog, what would you do? You know, and I was like, there's no right answer to that question, you know, so just bullshit something confidently and hope for the best.
Are we on?
Or say General John A. Lejeune.
There you go. So who is the first female Marine?
Oh, I couldn't tell you, man. I have no idea. I know Ruth Wood was the first female warrant officer. I know, was Ophelia Johnson the first female Marine aviator?
Female warrant officer? Can we get more obscure than that?
Right. It's weird. We're talking, God knows, more than 10 years ago now for me. But
wait a minute. Who was the first male Marine? Who's like serial number 00000001? Who is that dude?
I don't know, but he was drunk. I can assure you of that. All right? And that, in my opinion, is what matters.
Well, I don't know if he was drunk. The second one was drunk. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Here, I got a contract. You're going to get on the ship, and we're not sure when you're coming back. Your job is going to be to shoot sailors. Oh, yeah, I'm cool with that. Where do I sign?
You know, the Marine Corps is a great example of, and I mean one of many, but it's a great example of something that now is an establishment that we view through the lens of history. The Marine Corps just exists, and that's what we know. There was a time when the Marine Corps was a startup. You know, when the Marine Corps was just a good idea among some like-minded people. that's crazy to me. Like the idea that these fundamental establishments of my life, at least, at one time were just a group of guys with a good idea. I love that. I love that tidbit about history.
But it wasn't. It was, you know, what did Marines do? They served aboard naval vessels. They kept the sailors in line, and then if you needed a landing party to go. To go jack up some sheik someplace who was messing with the United States, like in The Wind and the Lion, right? You know,
and this is what Star Trek's gotten wrong all along. I love Star Trek, man, but every time they come to some weird new planet, they're like, well, there's 1,000 people on this ship. It's dangerous down there. We better send the first officer and the helmsman to go investigate.
Well,
we
need Captain Kirk just in case there's any hot chicks too.
Right?
Don't forget that. We need him to glom on the hot chicks down there. But you know what? You're right.
Like if they had 8 Marines and some body armor on the Starship Enterprise, the entire series would have gone different.
The you know? Opa Mae Johnson was
So at least I had the name.
Was the first you didn't know what you did, but I had the name. Was the first known woman to enlist in the United States Marine Corps. She joined the Marine Corps Reserve in 1918, officially becoming the first female Marine. Born in Kokomo, Indiana in 1879, died on August 11th, 1955 in Washington, D.C. Highest rank held, private. That's right.
They were good on her in 1918.
Yeah.
That was a whole different Marine Corps. That's pretty awesome.
Wouldn't you like to meet Opa Mae? Like, okay, first of all, they don't have women. Oh, I'm joining. Oh, girlfriend.
Yeah, right?
Oh, girlfriend, I don't think you are going to be allowed to. Second of all, have you met any of those guys? They're like sailors, except they have guns. Like, what could be worse than that? Right? You ever heard that term, drunk as a sailor on liberty? These guys are sailors on steroids, so it's not really, oh, no, I want to party with them. Okay, Opa Mae.
That's a woman I respect. A woman who, when you're like, they're like sailors, but worse, and they're like, yeah, I want to go be one.
That's for me. Yeah.
You know, that's for me.
Yeah.
That's for me.
He's got issues. Why are you attracted to him? Because your issues are bigger than his issues, huh? That's what I was saying. Like,
you know, my wife and I have said that for you. We just had our, Lord knows, I think 13th or 13th wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the, first of all, we didn't realize it was until like 3 p.m.
Come on, come on.
And was like,
hey, it's our wedding anniversary
for a
today?
Long time. You know, I'm sorry?
So somebody just blurts out, hey, geez, you'll never believe it. It's our wedding anniversary today? It went like that?
That's literally how it went.
Come
on. And then we got together and did the math real quick to try to figure out how long we've been together. You know, it's important to note, I know you know this, we just had a baby 8 months ago, you know, so we didn't celebrate Christmas really. We kind of skipped all the holidays in between just because we're distracted by trying to keep this tiny human alive. But my wife has never been too into anniversaries or romance. But that works well for me. Our crazies mesh, you know. She's got her own
psychological issues.
Not, I have mine.
She's not into romance, but you have a kid though, right? Did you adopt? Did you adopt a kid or
like the world's best drinking buddy?
Did you adopt
she
a kid?
Doesn't want to watch The Notebook.
Or manufacture
the kid. Listen, there's ways to make a kid that aren't that romantic.
Okay. All right. I'm with you on that. All right. I just wanted so your child wasn't adopted. You actually manufactured this thing.
Yeah, we produced my daughter the good old fashioned way.
Nice.
There were no rose petals or anything like that.
There's a lot of envious. There's a lot of envious guys out there listening because a lot of people got to go through the whole rose petal thing, right?
I tell you, you know what? There's a downside to it though. You know, my wife is a huge video gamer. She drinks just like the boys. She's
what?
An awesome, awesome lady. But it gets harder around holidays that you need to buy gifts for your wife when she's not into any girly shit.
No, you just buy yourself something and put her name on it.
Honestly, that's what I buy her a gun. I buy stuff like that. Yeah, because I mean, she doesn't want flowers. She doesn't want jewelry. She's not into diamonds. You know, I buy her a new video game system. She likes that. She's got the Xbox, the PlayStation, the Nintendo. She's got all of it. It's tougher to shop for a lady for Christmas or Valentine's Day or things like that when she's like, I don't want flowers. What the hell is this for?
I think you're wrong. I think then you just default to shop to yourself and you slap her name on it. And then if she doesn't like it, right, she can, you can say, okay, look, I'll get you the money for it and go buy something that you want. Go return for something.
Yeah, you know, she's big into antique shopping, you know what I mean? So the real secret is to just give her some money. And be like, buy something horrible to hang on the walls.
That always works. Something horrible always works. Now, we got to shift gears here because you guys, first of all, you've got some personal news in terms of a book that I want to talk about. But before we get to that, SoftRep made a little news last week. Talk to us about it.
Yeah, man, SoftRep, you know, has been around in its current form more or less since 2012. You know, Brandon Webb, former Navy SEAL, Jack Murphy's a GB and a Ranger, they started SoftRep early on to write about special operations military news in an approachable way for the layman. You know, it was really the goal behind SoftRep. I didn't come on until years later. I came on about 2 years ago. I'm a conventional force guy, you know. When I was first hired, there was only one or two other conventional side guys on staff. We had, 35 writers total in the stable. Every one of them was a Green Beret, you know, a Navy SEAL, things like that. But over time, the breadth of what we covered has kind of shifted. And I think I'm partially to blame for that because I'm not going to just sit here and write you a personal experience story about a raid in Afghanistan because I'm not an Army Ranger. And Luke's got way better stories about that, right?
And there's, there's only so many, you can only write about that so many times because part of the art is letting it breathe.
And providing an original insight instead of just giving another war story. That's what I really like about George Hand, for instance. If anybody ever asked me what's a good writer who's someone's work to read on SoftRep.com, I want to tell you mine. George Hand is the guy. You know, he was in Delta for over a decade. You know, he's retired now, works for the Deliver Fund combating human trafficking. And he's a poet and a warrior. The guy can write. It's amazing. You know? But what George does is he offers you a glimpse into being a Delta guy that isn't what you see on Making the Cut on the History Channel. You know? But you can't do that every day. You can't do that 20 articles a day, right?
Right.
So our scope has grown, and, you know, recently we found out a little bit before the announcement was made, corporate has decided to rebrand SoftRep NewsRep. The idea behind it being we're no longer beholden to the special operations community. A lot of the work that we do is foreign policy analysis. A lot of the work we do is culture analysis.
Wow.
That's not specifically a special operations function, so they want to move away from only being special operations guys. And as such, we're getting a new website. We're getting I'm assuming they're going to revamp the website. I don't know, to be honest. But on August 15th, we will no longer be SoftRep. We're going to be NewsRep now. You know, and I'm excited. I'm looking forward to getting to branch out a little bit. I don't have to write necessarily about, you know, every once in a while, it gets real tiring writing about another budget analysis of the F-35 program. Nobody clicks on it. I write it because I think it's important.
As interesting as that budget analysis may be, I think it. It's one of the things I most enjoy about my show is the wide palette of subject matter, that from Marine Corps history to current events to sports. I can't believe the Yankees got their heads kicked in on weekend by the Red Sox. By the way. So
I actually watched that game.
What a joke. So anyway, we won't discuss that too much. But I like that just intellectually in, because at the end of the day, bottom line is we're entertaining, educating people. They come here because they find it interesting and compelling, and that's why they go look for your content too. So while there's a conflict going on because of the new news that's coming out all the time and different things that are happening, I think that you're more able to do it then, right? Or at least I think so. But once the conflicts begin to dry up, I think, you know, your content gets more difficult to find and produce, and so it's appropriate to branch out. You can always narrow it back down if we do peer to peer or some conflict ramps up. But no, I think
you're totally right. You know, this is a bit of insider baseball.
I love
that. We obviously don't want to be about clickbait, but we do keep track of what stories are successful and which stories aren't. You know, and it is very cyclical. You know, there'll be lulls in traffic. Basically, like for instance, we had all this buildup about North Korea, where a lot of people were really concerned that we were going to go to war with North Korea just based on rhetoric. Once that rhetoric started to take a nosedive and things started to stabilize, which is good for the world, good for the country, but as a defense news website, your traffic plummets because people are now tired about talking about North Korea, right? Now, there are lots of legitimate threats to American national security ongoing all the time, but they're not always within the public's interest, right? They don't, sometimes the public is just tired of talking about Chinese espionage, right? So what this allows us to do is keep covering those things that I think are important. That's important to note. I think I did a guidance on shifting my lanes a little bit, but nobody's telling me to stop writing about anything I've been writing about, right? But now what I can do is on that day when I'm like, okay, things are kind of died down with North Korea. We already covered the breaking news, the updates. But there's something really important going on within Russian domestic politics that's got far-reaching implications. Now I can write about that. Even though it's not about a guy with a rifle in his hand, it pertains directly to the war effort, like the overall war effort, which is American national security. And I like that they're giving you the opportunity to kind of explore things that aren't directly related to kinetic operations, but play a big role in the way the world is unfolding. You know, and I'm excited about it.
You should be.
Change is scary.
Yeah, you're really going to get a chance to show your ass now.
He said,
what?
I had a guy, there's a couple of people that write to me pretty regularly that I trust their opinions because I know where they come from. I write a lot about aircraft and like carrier operations in the Navy.
Right.
There's this one person on Twitter who worked carrier ops on the flight deck in the Navy for many years. And every once in a while, so message me just to check my ass. You know, I wrote an article about Minuteman III ICBMs. I got an email immediately from a guy who used to man them telling me, you know what, you did a great job with this, but there's one thing that you missed, and I think you should check it out. I love that stuff because I'm not an expert. You know, you did that job for 8 years. I read about it, you know. I love hearing from these experts. But I'm nervous. You know, I'm nervous about branching out, broadening my horizons because, you know, if you – think something's interesting. There's definitely an expert out there who's going to correct you if you're doing it wrong.
But
that's going to be good for me. You know, I'm looking forward to it.
No, but and I think if you cover something, I think those of us who do this, you're constantly aware. Like the first time I ever did an interview about agriculture, oh my God, it was horrific. Like I didn't know anything about NAFTA and crop harmonization and how we do chemicals on each side of the border, you know, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I mean, I learned, and I find that stuff, you know, incredibly interesting, but I will say this, to do it in public is daunting, to say the least.
Yeah,
so,
especially in such a public forum like All Marine Radio,
yeah,
where you
don't.
No, no.
No, ooh, that's what we do. That's what we do. It's like if there's one thing like...
In my opinion, that's what the difference is between a good outlet and a subpar one, however, is that so there's always going to be somebody angry about what you wrote on Twitter. It doesn't much matter what you write. Someone's going to be mad about it. I'm not that interested in the trolls.
You're not.
However, when someone comes angrily with passionate criticism, you have this inclination to dismiss it as another troll. You know what I mean? You want to go, oh, this guy is just a jerk. But I have found that often when that really passionate, angry, sometimes aggressive or abusive criticism comes across, if it gets me in the gut, like if I feel it, it's probably because there's a kernel of truth to that. Maybe I had a little bias in that story, or maybe I got a detail wrong. I try really hard to give everyone the benefit of the doubt when they're shitting on me. However, I tend to ignore the people who just congratulate me for doing a great job. You know, some, I appreciate it. It's awesome. I will respond to you very quickly. But it's that guy who's like, you're an idiot. You don't know anything about this. You've obviously never launched one of these missiles. And I go, crap, you know what? I should go back and read a little bit more on this subject. It's a great way to keep me on my game. I never feel overconfident. I never feel as though there's nothing left for me to learn. as long as there's people out there criticizing and questioning what I do, their criticism might not always be founded. Sometimes it's based entirely in opinion.
Well,
but as long
I would,
paying attention to it, it keeps me from getting lackadaisical.
I will tell you that, you know, never be afraid to start off the conversation, even your criticism. For instance, somebody sent me an email about, well, I was down at Camp Lejeune, right? And they're like, hey, Mac, how many man hugs did you give? Cause they listen to the program and they know that I don't like hugging men. It's not my thing. If you're a girl, I'll hug you. If you're a guy, stick your hand out. Let's shake hands, bro. Try to come close to me. I just lock my elbow. Right? And I just keep you like,
it's like my wife is the same way. My wife is like, I don't see any reason why we need to hug.
Yeah. Why do we need to hug? I don't know. Yeah. Well, I do know you, but like, why do I want to hug you? So I did at the minimum amount. Like, you could tell when somebody wants to kind of, and I've learned, because I got two younger sons, right, how to do like the shoulder roll. So my shoulder hits their sternum, and that's like the most physical contact there is. So my left hand will be on their shoulder, you know, shake hands, and I drill them in their chest, right? So it's not really a hug. It's more like a boom. And then, what's up? And then I'm out. Okay? So there's no real physical contact. So I don't have to worry about any intimacy issues. So, which I'm terrible.
Your hugs are almost never pelvis to pelvis.
Never. We're not slow dancing here, bro. We're like just hugging it. I'm not even hugging it out. I'm bumping. So, yeah, so they, like, taunt you with stuff like that. When Mike Musselman comes on in hour three, anytime we talk about guns, somebody bombs out. He hates the whole discussion about stopping power of the .45. And he's like,
I do genuinely believe it's about shot placement, not kinetic transfer. So I'm with him on that.
Well, you know, what he's told us is that, look, you could get the same stopping power, right? Okay? All you got to do is mess with the ammunition. You want a hollow point?
That's true.
Right? Do we, you know, we...
Well, you know, not only that, but if you're really that worried about stopping power, I don't know why you're carrying a 1911. You know, I mean, there are plenty of larger caliber weapons out there. If stopping power is all that matters, you should be carrying an SMW 500.
Well, but yeah, but you... What he's taught us is you can do it with smaller caliber handguns or rifles. And this is how it works.
I do want to point out, however, because I'm sure I'm pissing people off, I own a 1911 and love it. You know, I'm not one of those guys that picks one team and plays for it. I think Fords are cool. I think Chevys are cool. I've got a Glock and a 1911. I think there are different tools for different situations. And if the situation's shooting in my backyard, I want whatever's fun. You know? However, I everyday carry a 9 though. So
every day.
I can't argue that you need the stopping power.
No, but you can do, you know, like the stopping power. Oh, 9 mil. You know, the people used them and they didn't knock people down. It's because we're using ammunition that was designed to go through paper.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So go get the
right. That's 100% true.
Yeah, go get the right ammunition and watch them. And the other thing, it doesn't work like it does in the movies. Like Mike and I were talking last week. There is no fireball with a hand grenade. Okay, this may shock people that listen, but there is no like 200-foot fireball that goes with a hand grenade. It looks
like a poof of smoke that appears out of nowhere in an instant. That's all you get.
And that's the dust that it kicks up, right? That's just the blast. There's no fireball.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay, here's the other one. Okay, you see this in the movies a lot. 200 yards running with your pistol, you're not going to hit shit. Okay. Okay. Now I know The Rock does it. Right, diving through the air, over a hedge, or over a wall.
Well, I'm sure he can, but most normal humans
do not.
This is a side project I did long ago. When I was still on active duty, I threw together a course, because, you know, we trained reservists. So as active duty guys, you know, you work 7 days a week, right? Because the reservists come on the weekends, and you have a job to do during the week.
Right.
So during the week, when things got slow sometimes, I would send out this chain email all throughout my command about how to fight zombies, just in case we needed to. And the idea was that it was a training tool. We're making it interesting because it's about zombies, because we're stationed in Fort Devens, Massachusetts. We're not really the tip of the spear here, you know. So
you might
let's
be.
Try to talk this training content in a way that makes it engaging.
Who
right?
are you? Wait. Who are you training? Isn't that like 3rd Battalion, 25th Marines or something?
Well, we were a 25th Marine Regiment, right? Oh. So, you know, we had 1st Battalion, 25th Marines located right there. 225 was down the
street. Yeah, and let me tell you, there's a reason why they call this shit All Marine Radio, okay? Because we know stuff like that.
Yeah, right? So we were at the 25th Marine Regiment headquarters in Fort Devens, right? So what I'm doing is I'm sending this stuff out to the other INI staff just as if, like, okay, so these are the training requirements we're going to get through next week. This is the way I related it to zombies, right? And eventually it just kind of became its own thing. But at any rate, I set this thing up once because we had a big argument about headshots. I genuinely believe that you cannot, on the run, shoot someone in the head with a pistol unless you are incredibly lucky or it is the only skill set you're training for, right? So the way that I demonstrated this was I took brown paper lunch bags and I put it on the kitchen counter at just about the height that a person's head would be.
Right.
And then I took a brown paper shopping bag, laid it horizontally, and put it just below the counter at about where your pelvis would be.
Okay.
And we took airsoft guns and I said, run through the kitchen and shoot them. Don't stop. You have to do it at, you know, at your gate. Shoot the target. Some guys managed to hit the paper lunch bag, the head, which is a much, much smaller target.
Right.
The pelvis is twice the size and doesn't move nearly as much. And bone structure demands that whether you're a zombie or a person, you can't chase with a shattered pelvis.
It's difficult.
If you're fighting zombies or someone in body armor, shoot them in the pelvis, man. That's the place to aim. You're going to blow the guy's junk off, that'll end the fight either way. But if you shatter his pelvis, he's got no bone support to walk or run.
No, that's...
You have not necessarily neutralized him. You might be able to shoot from the prone. But if you're on the run just trying to get your ass out of there, aim to the pelvis. Sorry, that's a big digression. But if you're playing zombies, don't go for headshots. You won't make them.
They're not
an important fact.
Unless you're The Rock. Unless you're Dwayne Johnson.
Unless you're The Rock.
If you smell what I'm cooking. All right. You're writing a book. Talk to me. Where did this come from?
So the book's called The Perception Wars, and it's actually, this kind of goes along with the transition to news rep. I was talking to my management a few months ago, Jack Murphy, our editor-in-chief, and, you know, I'm at this point this morning, I have written 1,973 articles for SoftRep over the span of my time working.
That's a ton
of content.
How many years?
How many what? I'm sorry?
How long have you been working there?
Just about 2 years.
And you produced what?
1,973 pieces of content. You know, in every article, minimum word counts 500 words. Most often than not, I'm at like the 1,000 to 1,100 word mark in my articles. So that's a ton of writing. That's a ton of content out there.
Machine?
A lot of it, to be fair, is covering breaking news,
okay,
which isn't that interesting after the fact.
Right.
Nobody goes back and reads CNN's top stories from November 10th, 2016, right? Nobody cares about what broke that day.
Correct.
However, throughout that span of time, you know, you've got the breaking news stories, then you've got kind of the media-centric stories, which are just, you know, a little bit of a write-up and showing you videos or pictures. But then you've got some stories that are legitimate analysis, right? And those are the ones that it breaks my heart to lose. And so when I went to grad school, I didn't know that I was going to be a writer. I just knew that I liked writing. So I got my master's in communications with an emphasis on marketing. Right? At the time, that was just because I thought I'd get a job with it. Now, a couple of years into this work, you know, I worked for a year as a professional writer prior to SoftRep. I've noticed that propaganda and marketing are exactly the same. Right? The only difference between marketing and PR versus propaganda is the customer. Marketing is trying to shift your perceptions of something in order to improve the way you see a brand, or sometimes try to manage the way you see a brand in a negative way. Maybe we're trying to convince you to buy Clorox over Tide. Maybe we're trying to convince you that the news about Clorox isn't as bad as it sounds. The idea is to change the way you perceive something. Propaganda and information operations work exactly the same way. And you see a lot of the same 101 level marketing tactics in North Korea's outward facing diplomacy. You see a lot of the same things in China's efforts, particularly. Russia, to a certain extent, their hybrid warfare campaign is more about throwing spaghetti at a wall. But elements of that spaghetti are, again, 101 level marketing tactics. So I started a lot, like right when I started this, kind of taking this marketing analysis approach to propaganda. And so what this first book is it's a lot of content that you've already seen on SoftRep, some new original analysis, a lot of new notes and changes to those stories. but it's really a collection of analyzing propaganda from the United States, Russia, China, North Korea, historic efforts and modern ones to kind of develop a fuller picture of how information operations are going on, basically how we got here based on historical elements, and then what we're looking at today in the digital sphere, right? And what it really is it's kind of an academic exploration. You know, it's kind of more of like something you might read in a marketing class necessarily about propaganda than it is a novel or anything like that. But I think when you finish it, you get kind of this more developed idea of the stakes. You know, we see things about Russian, meddling with the 2016 presidential election. We don't think about the fact that that effort is far broader in scope than one election or one candidate.
I don't know. Why do you think that doesn't come up very much? Because
I think I know exactly why, to be honest.
What?
And I really think it's because we view everything through the lens of our own domestic political passions. So if you hate Donald Trump, all you think about when you hear Russia's information operations is that they colluded with Trump. And if you voted for Donald Trump, that narrative is insulting to you. Because it insinuates that either you were acting on behalf of a foreign government with your vote, that you, and I put the quotes around this, were dumb enough to be influenced by a foreign government.
I know, but
to vote that way.
But when we discuss this, it's like, look, the Russians have been conducting or have been meddling in elections forever since the end of World War II. They began to see these operations as a way to rig an event to get somebody sympathetic to them, you know, so that they would, you know, they could build the Soviet Union and their relationship.
It's not just elections.
Yeah.
You know, Russia has long been invested in managing the way populations view them, foreign populations. And the reason being, so here in America, we have a representative.
Well, hold on. Let me butt in. These tools were originally, proofed on the Russian people. So these influence operations are this is how you do it in a communist nation. You infiltrate the Workers' Party, right? You infiltrate this, you infiltrate that. The people you don't like, you put out bad stories on them, right? All these tools are things that used to be and are still used to whatever degree on the Russian people. That's why the Russians kind of, they roll their eyes and they laugh at it like, yeah, stand by. And the beautiful thing is the internet paved the way so that you could stay in Moscow or with, they gave you.
It removed the barriers between a foreign government and the American citizen.
Gave you a mechanism that you could distribute your information products and attempt to influence. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. And so,
and an important facet of this book is the idea, because there's a lot of people in the United States that still go, well, you're not going to influence me. I'm smart. You know, Americans, by and large, think that they're smarter than the average American,
right?
Which means at least half of them are wrong, right? But perception management, information warfare has nothing to do with smart or educated. You know, like some great examples that I cite in the book about a historical precedent for this. Like diamond engagement rings. Here in America, we just see that as something that's a natural part of life. It's a part of our culture. We exchange diamonds when we agree to get married.
Right.
That was the result of a De Beers marketing effort, in our grandparents' era. Prior to that, diamond engagement rings weren't really exchanged for weddings.
Really?
They just launched the campaign. You can actually go to De Beers website, and you can look at their – if you go – click on the PR notices and stuff like that. Not like their marketing stuff, but their internal investor PR. You can see the chart that they made when they said, okay, in 1920, we launched the campaign to convince American people they had to exchange diamonds for weddings. And then you can see from 1920 to 2005, it was an 80% market growth.
Nice.
Then right next to that, they have a bar that says, we introduced the concept in Europe in 1935. From 1935 to 2005, we've had a 70% market growth. And in China, they introduced the idea in, 2005.
Hey,
do
you know who did it?
Yeah, De Beers. De Beers Diamond Company.
What guy at De Beers? Larry De Beers? Yeah, Larry did that. Do you think he got, the big promotion?
It's their marketing team. You know, the very same way. Another great example.
But it had to be one. It had to be
a real thing until World War II.
I know, but it had to be one dude because, see, I have this thing like the variety pack, right? You can go buy tampons in a variety pack now. That's the same guy. When I was a kid, like, you went to the store and there was 12 packs of Lay's potato chips, okay? The yellow one, the yellow bags, you could have those for lunch. And all of a sudden, I go to the supermarket with my mom, Kathleen, we go to Vans, which was our supermarket, and then there's this thing called the variety pack. And you've got Cheetos in there, you've got barbecue, you've got regular, you know, it's like, you got corn chips. You know, it's like, oh my God, this is awesome. That dude evidently wore out his welcome at Frito-Lay. He then gets fired and he's unemployed. And then what happens? He goes to Procter & Gamble and he's sitting in the Procter & Gamble and he's got one, he's a one trick dude. Hey, I've got an idea.
However, it's important to note, though, when it comes to corporations like this, the way that they insulate themselves from liability if anything goes wrong is through dispersed responsibility. And that's why it's hard to pin these things down.
Why you're telling me you don't know. Like, you knew the name of the first female Marine. You didn't know the narrative behind it.
But this is what I mean, though, is that, like, you could say there was this guy who came up with the idea, but it was a concerted company-wide effort to make this branding.
This Merle.
Just like the transition from SoftRep to NewsRep, Brandon Webb, the CEO, may have made the decision. But the decision gets made, and then 60 guys go to work to make this shift.
Whatever. Don't sell me the team, okay? I don't buy that stuff.
But that's the truth of the matter, because one guy might have a great idea, but unless it's carried out, it doesn't matter how good the idea is.
Now we're going to talk about the truth.
Well, we're getting lost in the weeds here. What's important to remember?
We got to go back. First of all, what's the title of the book?
The Perception Wars. And the idea being that we're currently fighting more than one, and we have been for a long time. The premise of the book effectively is that information is a part of warfare, and that part of warfare is ongoing with or without kinetic operations.
Whoa.
Optimally, if we were to do it properly, it would mitigate how many kinetic operations we need to pursue. Right now, America's not doing that great a job, to be honest with you, when it comes to narrative. You know, this is not my original thought. This is the thought of Dr. Ajit Mann over at Narrative Strength. A brilliant point. America bolsters bad actor narratives and the way that we currently combat them. And what I mean there is Russia comes out with some bullshit.
Right.
Random crazy shit. Like they'll say that America is supporting ISIS in Syria. That's a big narrative they've been pushing lately. A
couple weeks ago.
America responds by saying, Russia says that we're supporting ISIS in Syria, but we're not. Now, the way human psychology works is called source amnesia. You see enough headlines about something, you start to just assume that it's real, without remembering where you caught it from. This is part of the fake news dilemma, right?
No.
So when America says, Russia keeps saying this, but they're wrong, here's some proof, what we're really doing is we're bolstering Russia's claims. We're looking guilty. We're saying, we were accused of this crime, and you know what happens when you're accused of rape? People assume you're guilty. You know what happens when you're accused of doing something bad in the geopolitical stage? People assume you're guilty. What America needs to do is create its own narratives. We're doing this in Syria. Russia's going to try to convince you because of this, because it's in their best interest, because of this. Instead, we're playing the response game instead of the first person to talk game. That's one facet of it, but it's something we're doing wrong. But a lot of the book is really more about just trying to make you a more informed social media user, a more informed news reader. The idea is that I can't teach you how to not let this affect you, but I can tell you enough about it that you'll spot it coming. And spotting it coming is, I think, the first step, you know? And I got to tell you, going through this whole process, even though the books were edited, or the articles were edited that are included all for the site, you know, you re-edit, you add notes. Reading this whole book again, I'm proud of it.
Whoa.
And that's weird for me. I'm not normally proud of my work, but I think it's good work, and I think that if someone reads it, they'll be able to put the book down and go, man, you know, I never really realized just how far-reaching China's efforts to manage perceptions were here already in the United States. But now I see it everywhere. I want to ruin movies for you. I want to ruin TV shows. I want you to look at that Old Navy commercial and go, oh, I know what they're doing right there. I see that.
I'm onto this.
I'm onto you, Old Navy. Hollings. That's my goal.
Hollings told me. All right. Where do they find the book?
Well, pretty soon it's going to be available on Amazon in paperback and for the Kindle. I couldn't tell you for sure exactly when because, you know, I might have wrote the stuff, but I don't really make all the decisions. It'll be available very soon, and you'll be able to find it by searching my name on Amazon, or I just stood up alexhollings.com, and you'll definitely be able to find it there, as well as, you know, all over the place on my social media.
All right, bud. So will everybody still find your work at SoftRep? When do you guys become NewsRep?
So we become NewsRep on August 15th, but I've been assured that all of our old content is still going to be there. It may migrate to the new domain. It may stay at SoftRep's domain. I couldn't tell you for sure. You'll always be able to find my work by finding me on social media. But if you're looking for a story I wrote, you know, a year ago or something like that, right now, I couldn't tell you for sure. But I know it'll still be there.
Okay.
I'm just not sure what website to type
in. And I would imagine they'll redirect and do all the rest of that stuff. Well, first of all, congratulations. Sounds like it'll open up opportunities for you, and that's never a bad thing. And I need a signed copy of the book, bud. So make sure.
Heck yeah, man. You got it.
Make sure
I'll
get that done.
One of the first prints.
All right. The one and only Alex Hollings here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio. Alex, have a great day. Good luck with your baby, and happy anniversary.
Man, have fun out there in Quantico.
I will, thanks. There you have it. We're going to take a quick break. Michael Musselman, the gunner, joins us next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.